So I'm going to start our evening with a short introduction to the Anapanasati Sutta, and then I'll hand the floor over to Steve, who's going to lead us in our practice with the first section of the sutta this evening. So I was first exposed to the Anapanasati Sutta pretty early in my practice, when I read Larry Rosenberg's book, Breath by Breath. And this is a wonderful book, so if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. But at the time that I read that book, I was pretty much, well, not exactly a total beginner, but I wasn't really all that experienced. And so I really didn't know enough to appreciate the nuances of this style of practice and how it fit in with the other training I had or how I could use it. So I didn't think about it too much. I just felt like lots of good Dharma advice in this book. But more recently, I've been working more with the Anapanasati Sutta, and I've really gotten to appreciate how helpful it is, and especially over this last year or two at Sims, where we've been working with the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, and now with this transcendent dependent origination. The Anapanasati really fits in well with these things. So the Anapanasati Sutta is the Buddha's discourse on the mindfulness of breathing. That's the translation. And as we practice with this sutta, part of what we'll be learning most definitely is how to develop concentration through mindfulness of the breath. And this can be a really useful thing. I think a lot of us feel like we don't have enough concentration in our meditation practice, but can be confused about how to develop it. And, we may wonder if we can really develop enough concentration just through mindfulness alone, through continuity of mindfulness. We might wonder if we really have to do jhana practice to develop concentration and aren't really even sure what that might be like. So I think the Anapanasati instructions might give us some really good answers to our questions about concentration. Because in this style of meditation, we use the breath to develop concentration and steadiness of mind, but we don't just stop there. We continue to explore all the different facets of our experience, all the same ones we work with in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which I think a lot of you are familiar with. The body, the feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, the mind, including our thoughts and emotions, and then the wisdom of the Dhamma. And the difference with this sutta is that it's structured so we continue to use mindfulness of the breath to keep us calm and concentrated and steady all throughout as we investigate all the different things that arise in our practice. So it's a really nice method for developing and maintaining concentration where you're still exploring and investigating many different things. And as we work through the instructions in this sutta, we'll also find that we're cultivating the seven factors of awakening. Some of them are specifically mentioned, some not, but they're in there too. Cultivating mindfulness. Investigation, when we're looking at the mind, the body, we're cultivating energy, rapture, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. So all of those factors will come into play as we work with this sutta. And then finally, especially for those of you who've been active coming to Sims this year, a big plus of this method for us doing our studies with Sims is that it leads us through the steps that are really similar to the ones we find in the path of transcendent dependent origination. And because of that, it can be a really big help to work with this sutta as we investigate these teachings. So the Anapanasati Sutta includes four sets of instructions, which we'll cover in the coming weeks. First, mindfulness of the body and breath. Next, mindfulness of feeling, tone, and rapture. Then mindfulness of the mind. And finally, mindfulness of wisdom, or what is called dhammas in the language of the Satipatthana Sutta. So we start with something really simple, although of course we know paying attention to the breath is simple, but not easy, and then end with something that's really profound. The wisdom of the Dhamma, which is something that we might need a lifetime to really understand. And we bring mindfulness of the breath with us through this whole exploration. So as we start here, I'd like to reassure you that your goal in this class shouldn't be to master each of these levels. It's more to get a sense of them and a sense of how to practice with them so you can continue on your own if you feel like this technique is something that's helpful for you. So this is an introduction and an exploration. And it's going to be an exploration too for those of us who are teaching it, because none of us feel like we're really experts in this Anapanasati method. It's more like we've all worked with it some. We all feel like it's been really helpful to us, and we want to learn more. And so we're really happy to invite you along to learn with us in this exploration. So is there anything else that any of my fellow teachers would like to add before I turn the floor over to Steve? If so, you can unmute. I noticed a few hands like this, so maybe it's just everybody is really glad to be here. And one thing before I forget, I want to tell you is that we did get the Zoom link for this class, and you'll be able to use that same Zoom link for each of the subsequent classes. It's not going to change, but we will be sending it out just to make sure you have it before each of the remaining classes. So wonderful to see you here. And now I'm going to turn the floor over to Steve so we can start our practice with this first section of the Anapanasati Sutta, which is mindfulness of the body and breath.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that lovely beginning, Lindell. And it's a delight to be cooperating, colleague, what's the right verb, with you, and wonderful to be with my other Dharma friends. So I'm going to introduce a little bit of the origins of this Anapanasati Sutta, and then explore, it's in, as she said, it's in four sections, which are called tetrads in the lingo of this this sutta. So I'm going to explore the first tetrad. But what's striking about this sutta is who the Buddha delivered it to and when. Because when he offered this sutta, it was kind of at a high point in his 40 years of teaching, a moment when he was surrounded by his most accomplished and realized disciples. They had gathered together in Savatthi at Jetavana Monastery, the place where Buddha accomplished 24 of his reigns retreats. So this is more than any other place he was. And by the way, if you ever get a chance to go on pilgrimage in India, go there, because that's amazing. It's permeated with his presence to this day. So this transpired kind of at the heart of his years of teaching, and these students were his leading disciples, and it's recorded, the sutta's number 118 in the middle length discourses. And as it says in that sutta, that these monastics were teaching each other in vigorous groups of 20 and 30 with great success. The sutta said, and the new monastics taught and instructed by the elder monastics achieved successive stages of high distinction. So at the end of this period, this is Raid's retreat. At the end of this period, the Buddha sat before this silent assembly of monastics. And it's always kind of beautiful in the suttas where he talks these silent assemblies where there's just not a peep. Everyone's so in their concentration, in their presence. It's just dead silence. And he said how moved he was by their accomplishment and the levels of awakening. He said, monastics, I am content with this progress. My mind is content with this progress. So arouse still more energy to attain the unattained, to achieve the unachieved, to realize the unrealized. So he was seeing potential. And then he did something I've never seen anywhere else in the suttas, which is that he offered to stay in the same place for one more month so that these monks could practice effectively. And the monastics, it is said, practice still more intensively. So there's always this aspect of, yeah, effort works. You know, that's really worth bringing it into our hearts and on our journey without being tight about it, but it works. And at the end of that month, he again addressed the silent sangha of monastics. And he said, such an assembly is rare for the world to see. It consists purely of heartwood, calling it an incomparable field of merit. Then he listed all, he kind of scanned this field of monastics, and he listed all the levels of attainment. It was a whole range. Some were arhants, some were just beginning. He could see, because he was a Buddha, where everybody was, and he kind of listed all of their attainments. And then he launches into what we're talking about tonight. He says, when mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. When the four foundations of mindfulness are developed and cultivated, they fulfill the seven enlightenment factors. When the seven enlightenment factors are developed and cultivated, they fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. So this is, you know, a highway to awakening. So then he proceeded to teach this Anapanasati Sutta, these 16 steps application of mindfulness of breathing. So this is a teaching he gave to the elite, and he himself, as you said there, this is what he practiced also. So and by the way, don't be daunted by the 16, you know, that seems like a lot of things, right? It's okay. You can work it in different aspects as it works for you. And a key point, as Linda was saying, in one way it's not different. It's the same as this core structure of the four foundations of mindfulness. But the sutta, it also shifts the emphasis in some significant ways. So as four foundations, mindfulness of four aspects of our experience, of body, of vedanas, of qualities of mind, and objects of mind, or dhammas. And that's the overview of being mindful of everything. So these 16 steps, four tetrads, correspond to the four foundations, but they're in a way linear. They build one on another, getting more and more subtle over the arc of these 16. And an interesting thing about this is you know, it can be approached sequentially, or we can also dip into different parts of the 16 in our practice, depending on what seems useful. So don't kind of be daunted by, oh my goodness, I haven't completed this. How can I even think about the future ones? It's okay. Just see in your heart what works for you and utilize that. These are tools for awakening. So the first tetrad, that's what I'm going to talk about here. And the thing about, as Lindell said, a specific thing about these 16 is that mindfulness of breathing continues through all 60 of them. In a sense, we're doing two things. We're always being mindful of breathing, and then we're expanding, you'll see, over time, and also holding another aspect. But having said that, in the first two of this tetrad, the first two steps are actually focused on mindfulness of breathing. So it's both at once, mindfulness of breathing and mindfulness of breathing in the beginning. And it's a difference. I'll just say one more thing. It's a difference because in terms of body, in a sense, this first tetrad is the body, corresponds to the body, part of the Four Foundations. But in the Four Foundations, as some of you know, there's six refrains corresponding to all different parts of our bodies. There's body parts, there's gestures, there's all of our viscera, there's the body coming apart at death. So it scans every aspect of body. In this practice, it's just focused on breathing. Breathing, breathing, breathing. The other stuff doesn't come up. So it's just focused on breathing. So which is actually pretty amazing. And in the first step is mindfulness of long breaths, feeling the fullness of a long breath. And this is slightly, it can be, it gets in this interesting area where different schools of Theravada or different teachers have slightly different interpretations of some of this, which I'll touch on. Because in the Satipatthana, when we talk about mindfulness of, you know, it talks about a mindful of short and long breaths. In that case, he's just talking about, the Buddha's talking about being mindful of a naturally occurring long breath or a naturally occurring short breath. In this case, some teachers say that this mindfulness of long breath, you can actually extend a long breath, like create a longer breath and be mindful of that. That's one of the ways this is often taught. And so this can be interpreted as breathing in strongly and being mindful of that. And that actually can be useful because it can be a way to kind of ground yourself at the beginning of a practice, to do a long breath or two, be mindfully do it. And so it's a little different than in the other practice, but it's very useful. So you might, we'll try that when we sit for a few minutes. You know, and sometimes when we try to practice, we've been really busy, we're doing stuff, we're planning stuff, all these mental churning. So to just actually do a conscious long breath or two or three can bring us, land us in our body. But in any case, I realized when I went back on my notes that in 2020, I was a great good fortune to do a series with Anilayo. He did show up, but it was mostly recorded, but he actually did show up for the Q&As on Anapanasati. So speaking to this particular point, Anilayo said, quote, "At the outset, it can be helpful to take on an intentional long breath, then observe how the breath naturally becomes softer and shorter. This is especially useful when mind is distracted. But if practice is rolling, then depend on the alternative interpretation. Just be aware of how long or short it is." And as some of you know, Anilayo is like a master of exploring interpretive alternate interpretations and laying them all out, and then you can see what works for you. Okay, so the first, long breath. The second is mindfulness of breathing short. And when, you know, our breath settles down, that can be where we go. Everything is quieter and shorter, and our mindfulness gets subtler, and we just rest our attention on this short breath. So there's, you can see right there, there's a lot of natural transitions built in, as you'll see during this course, during this series, built into the transitions of the 16 steps. They go one from another in a very natural way. Right here, long breath, short breath, that is how it often happens. And this is, of everything else in the 16, this is the one that's the most similar, is the second step, to the Four Foundations. It's just resting in a short breath, being mindful of it, pretty much period. And we can find a place, you know, to pay attention, tip of the nose, inside our nostrils, diaphragm, wherever we can rest our attention in a tactile way to the breath arising and passing. And it's always good to remember it's not the idea about the breath, but the experience of the breath that we're trying to do there. Just be present with what is arising and passing. Now, the third step is where we start to enter into new territory. Although it's, again, resonant with the Four Foundations, we're instructed to broaden our attention and mindfulness to the whole body of the breath, quote unquote. That's the way it's translated, the whole body of the breath. And this is a matter, I swear this is true. This is a matter of some debate among Buddhist scholars and practitioners exactly what that means, but that's okay. They both work. They're kind of complementary. One way of seeing it is this is the whole arc of the breath as it comes in and it stops and then it slowly recedes and you just rest with that whole arc of the breath. The other alternative is that it means feeling the breath through your entire physical body, which is an experience you may have. And so that's okay. Like, whichever works for you is just fine. But both different teachers, different scholars interpret it different ways. The same thing comes up actually with the middle length discourses. With the Four Foundations, the same little bit of a question about what the whole body of the breath means. But mindfulness of the whole body, when we think of our whole body, it's a really interesting process because you really settle into it and think of it that way. You can feel almost imperceptibly your entire body moving with breath. You can feel this whole thing happening. And sometimes when you settle into that, our body can feel kind of like a mountain, you know, this real stable presence with breath just arising and passing and this real powerful presence of body. So it's very, very wonderful that way. So we're learning to broaden our mindfulness to include the body, but also maintain this continual mindfulness of breathing, getting into that area of this two parallel things happening, which is part of what happens throughout this Anapanasati Sutta. So the whole body part can be really helpful to get us away from the idea of the breath, which I'm prone to, and to settle into really the physicality of it, the tactileness of it. And then the last and final stage of this first tetrad is to become aware of the bodily calmness that appears, the tranquility that appears as we rest into steady awareness of each breath. And that calmness has an aspect of concentration, of continuity of consciousness, and then just settling. But it has to do with that, as Linda was saying, that stability of mind. We're not talking about jhanas, but we're talking about a stable continuity of presence while we're being mindful. So it really settles into a calmness, a tranquility towards the end. And that's a cycle that we'll be seeing all through the 16 steps. And when we settle into that calmness, when things really become present, there's happiness that emerges, there's energy that emerges, which will be what whoever's talking about the second tetrad will be touching on. But you can see how this physicality moves us into a kind of energy in a very smooth way. The last part of this first tetrad, sometimes translated, I will breathe in and out, calming the body, calming the body. So, you know, a key part of the 16 steps is this natural intertwining of mindfulness and concentration, of mindfulness and continuity. It emerges inherently from this. And that's actually wonderful because there is, as some of you know, there's debates within Theravada. Does mindfulness come first? Does concentration come first? To how concentrated you have to be to have insight, all these kind of things. Here it's interwoven. So we don't have to worry about it. It just kind of comes up together. So this centrality of mindfulness of breathing is a tool that will deepen our concentration and that will also bring insight as we go along. So these 16 steps, as we'll see, get into subtler and subtler levels. Okay. So I guess we're going to sit now for a few minutes and then we'll have some time for discussion. But maybe, how about Linda, how about if we just open it up for a minute and see if there's any questions now before we sit, because that might be helpful. So anything about what Linda said, what I said before we sit that you might want to, you know, stick your hand up about, or your digital hand or whatever kind of hand you want to wave? Bingo. Anastasia.
Hello. I have a question between, I'm like totally new to this, but to the Anapanasati Sutta. What's the difference, or I guess can you just extrapolate a little bit more between the Anapanasati Sutta practice and the jhana practice? You kind of mentioned it briefly.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'll say, and then I'll say what Linda will say, or if she wants. I mean, jhana practice is specifically about concentration, and it's often from that viewpoint seen. You know, there's a way of seeing this that would be the first thing you do, and then you can be have mindfulness bring you to insight. Based on the depth of that stability of mind. That's not, for instance, that's not in particular the way IMS teachers taught it when they came back from Asia. They flipped it around the other direction because for most lay people, that's pretty hard to do, or really hard to do. Some people have a special proclivity, but most people find jhanas pretty elusive, including moi. So, but mindfulness does work. I think the interweaving part, it's you know, it's just not flat out jhanas per se at all, but there's elements of stability of attention, concentration, if you will, that emerge from this. What do you think, Lindell?
Yeah, I would say that's so. That's so. I think one of the big different, like this first part where we're really focusing on the breath may sound a lot like initial stages of jhana, pure concentration practice. But as we move on, we add more and more things. And there's also a emphasis on, well, the object is the breath. In the Anapanasati, there's an emphasis on noticing changes like long or short, the quality of the breath, moving it out to notice the difference it feels like when the breath is moving through the body. So it's less one-pointed, if you know what I mean. So we're not just focusing just on the feeling of the breath at a certain spot by the nose, but it includes more. And it will continue to have include a variety of things as we go further. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, and jhana practice is generally focusing on the object of concentration and excluding all else. And mindfulness practice is including all else. So that's a big difference, you know, because I mean, part of the beauty, what I just love about mindfulness practice is it works, you know, it works there in a crowded street corner. It works when you're having a debate with a person you love the most. It works. Lori.
Thank you all. Steve, what you said that popped for me was how this Anapanasati, and maybe you can speak a little more to it, is the fact that it wasn't taught, and it was taught with this group that were already established in their ethics, their, this well practiced kind of, as opposed to like the Satipatthana more, and the four foundations and all of that. It seems like when the Buddha revealed or taught the Anapanasati, it was on top of well established practice. And so are you proposing that go ahead and create an Anapanasati practice or be more like them where we've got, this stronger foundation in the Satipatthana and then, work as we are drawn or can with the Anapanasati? Thanks.
Yeah, I think this, I'm glad Lindell's here so we can both respond. I mean, on a certain level, I don't know. You know, I think it depends on what works for who. I mean, my personal practice is really simple. So I got to say, I don't work with Anapanasati too much, but I tap into it on occasion. But I know that it really can work. And I know some people that do it, that you can, you know, you can see how the steps go from one to another. And over the course of a period of practice, it'll take them deeper and deeper and deeper. It has a direction that points unerringly toward awakening. It's really powerful in that way, as we'll be exploring. So the fact that it exists is really important, and that it was shared like this, and exactly how we work with it, we have to each feel out according to what works for us. But I think I'm really glad we're doing this, because I think the class, I mean, because I think there's, I mean, it's interesting reading the suttas, like I've been reading the numerical discourses, and there's all these different sequentialities that lead to awakening. The Buddha talks about different routes that are really all the same route, but he kind of different articulations of them. But some of the, especially in the fourth tetrad in particular, some of the particular points that come up here are repeated and resonated over and over. So I think it's a very powerful package pointing at the thing he always pointed at, which is awakening. What do you think, Wendell?
Yeah, and I would say too, I don't think, because it was taught to this more elite group of monks, I wouldn't take that as meaning that we have to be an elite group to practice it. We did encourage people who took this class to have some basic meditation background, so they know a little bit about, you know, mindfulness of the body, emotions, thoughts, and so on, as a kind of basic background, because it might get confusing if you were a real beginner. But I think that for those of us here, I would go ahead. I think you should feel very comfortable about plunging in, exploring it, working with it. You might feel as we go along that you feel really comfortable maybe with the first couple of tetrads, or maybe working with the first three, but the final one where we really get into, you know, the impermanence and cessation is like, this is a little bit too much for me right yet. But I think that I would not worry about not having enough skill or background to at least begin.
Yeah, it is funny. I hear that. And, you know, it's funny. I've been around this stuff long enough that the question of who's a beginner and who isn't has just fallen away. Because, man, I mean, I've gotten more convinced about rebirth. So just say, hypothetically, rebirth is true. Man, I don't know. I've had, like, these young people pop up, and they got it. It's like, oh, my God, I can feel the momentum in them. Like, you know, you were probably my teacher some former lifetime, or who knows. So, you know, if you feel like it works for you, do it. And even if you started yesterday, it's just whatever you see to do, you know. It's so beautiful, because we, you know, in this group, I feel great humility about being in a group like this, because every single person may have momentum that they don't even know about yet. And they may find that this will become a central practice to them in a way that they may not anticipate yet. So don't feel constrained if you cognitively think you've only been practicing for 2 months. Don't think that's anything. Just follow your heart and where your intuition takes you. Anybody else? And I don't have to go first if someone wants to ask Lyndall a question first. I just did that twice, but. Okay. Lauren, you gotta unmute there.
Shashi had his hand up.
Shashi, okay.
That's what I was.
A physical hand? How radical is that? Shashi, please unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So this is just more of a curiosity question. What do you think the Buddha's motivation was for teaching this to such a accomplished group Do you think it was an exercise in beginner's mind or something else?
It's a good question. It feels like he was so, because this was a practice he did, because he does, as you probably know, in the course of the suttas, he goes on retreat. It's like he's the Buddha and he goes on a retreat and leaves for a month or two and some, I'm out of here, I'm going to retreat. So he practiced and he has said, I think here or somewhere, that this is the practice he did. So it feels like he was just so moved and struck by the depth of this group and how deeply they were practicing that he was inspired to share what he did. That's kind of how I read it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe like you say, Steve, he felt like these practitioners, for them, they could go all the way through all 16 steps and all the way to awakening. So, yeah. But I suppose we should get on with our
Okay.
So we have enough time, and then there'll be more time for questions at the after the sit too, before we break.
Okay. Yeah, we'll sit for about 20 minutes, and you know, of course, in some of the suttas, he just gave this one talk about not self, and poof, people awakened. So that too. Okay, so we're gonna sit for about 20-ish minutes, and I'll guide a little bit, but mostly we'll be on our own, together on our own. So just settle. Can you hear this? Yes, all right. So you might, let's just try the, that model of the long breath in a conscious way for a few of those. So why don't you just settle in and take a deep breath. Be mindful of it. Just let it flow in and out. Help ground yourself in your body. And through the strength of that breath, become aware of the breath as it goes in and out. And then for the next few minutes, let's just rest in the breath as it is, perhaps a little longer because we just were using that. And now as the body calms and the breaths become shorter, more light, let your attention rest on the delicacy of those short breaths. Now start to settle down into your whole body. Either way, whole body of the breath. Either way that works for you. Perhaps the whole arc of the breath following the inhale, the moment between and the exhale. Or perhaps feeling the whole presence of the breath in your body. And your whole body moves so slightly, so wonderfully as you breathe. So settle down into that rootedness like a mountain, right on the earth. The whole body of the breath. Step three here. If thoughts arise, just settle back into your body. Let your body be an anchor. Just feel the breath, the whole body of the breath. And now still being mindful of the breath as it goes naturally in and out, become aware of the calming effect on the body. The way the body is calmed, relaxed, at ease in this moment. Continue cultivating moment by moment mindfulness of the breath. Also feel your body calming. In these last few minutes, if you find yourself thinking about the past, speculating about the future, that's just happening now. So in now, this moment, just feel the breath as it goes in and out, and a settling of body, the calmness of body. the tranquility of body. Okay, I rang the bell. I'm not sure if you heard it. And you didn't hear it. What a mystery. Anyway, the bell is rung. So, yeah, so you've got 20 minutes for any, you know, thoughts or questions. And, you know, if you want to address a question particularly to Lyndall or myself, you could name us, you could toss it up. And certainly if Suze or Lauren have any thoughts about anything, do feel free to jump in about anything that's asked. Suze.
Well, I'm definitely exploring this along with everybody else. And I noticed that when I intentionally had a long breath and was paying attention to it, there was quite a bit of tension, a kind of tightness in my body. And when I went to the normal breath, my natural breath, which is normally pretty long in and out, I was so much more relaxed that the paying attention more to the long and the short was kind of tension producing. And either one of you that have had some experience with it, I'd appreciate any kinds of suggestions or maybe it's just, it was just, I felt good that I noticed it, but that's what I wanted to ask about.
What do you think, Lyndall? I'll try to sit back. Yeah, go for it.
I could say something about that. I know for myself, the way I have interpreted those instructions, it's I've used sort of the method of just be with the breath as it is, rather than the strategy of intentionally trying to take long breath or short breath, more just being with the breath as it is. And that works for me. I mean, I think the important thing is to actually really connect with the feeling of breathing. So I would say, you know, if taking intentional long breaths doesn't work for you, don't do it. If it does work for you and it helps you, anybody else, it helps you to really connect with their breath and get started in a good way, then use it. But I think both interpretations are equally valid. It sounds like that was what Analayo was saying, that you could use either.
Right, and he was kind of referencing it too. If your mind is more bumpy, this might help get you started. But if you have momentum, then maybe it's not needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's see. Who's next? Judith, I think, was next, right?
Yeah. Well, my experience was a little bit similar to Sue's, but I kind of interpreted it a little bit differently. At first, when I was taking long breath, and I have noticed this before in meditation, it was like, okay, I was doing the breathing. I was controlling it with the long breath. And then as it settled, at some point, it was just the body breathing itself. And that was more relaxed. And toward the end, it was like the breath was barely perceptible, you know. It just got so light and so almost not there. Well, obviously it was there because I was alive, but, you know, it was, yeah, very, very light. Mm-hmm. And continually more and more relaxed as I just let the body breathe itself rather than doing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is sort of a sequentiality of non-self-revealing,
yeah,
in that process, mm-hmm. which is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's kind of funny, isn't it? You start to realize the body's just this thing we're in that breathes. How
yeah,
odd is that?
Yeah. I really don't have to make it do it. It will do it.
It does it, yeah.
It does it, but it, you know, it... And then it is whatever it's supposed to be, and it just gets lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. Mm-hmm. As, yeah.
So you can see the direction of going towards calming.
Right.
That's so interesting.
Take
right?
less breath to.
And that keeps repeating all the way through the mm-hmm. The four touchites.
Interesting. Yeah.
Let's see, Jude.
Yeah. So am I correct to think, because you talked about this as a style of meditation or technique or method, that in contrast to what? Open awareness, you know, I mean, there's lots of different ways you can meditate, right? Mm-hmm. Focusing on different things. And I understand it's a concentration practice, really, focused on concentration. So can you just kind of put that in context for me?
Yeah, as you say, there are a lot of different methods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one method that you mentioned would be open awareness, where you're just sort of sitting, resting in awareness and letting things come and go. If we were working more directly with the Satipatthana instructions, we might, well, it might be just the same to begin with, but perhaps we would not be keep carrying the breath with us as much. Or a pure concentration practice. You would just focus more on the breath in a specific area and wouldn't spend so much time noticing the longness and the shortness and the body and all these other things. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. there are these various techniques, and you can use what you feel is helpful for you. So this particular one has these specific instructions that kind of combine concentration and mindfulness of the four foundations. So yeah, it's a style and a technique.
Okay, that's helpful. I really like the part of breathing in the whole body and feeling grounded to the earth and solid. And I've done that before, but this was felt a little different, and I enjoyed that part. Yeah, thank you.
And it's kind of like an articulation of, a sense of direction, because the four foundations, it's not really sequential. It's just essentially articulating that we're cultivating mindfulness of every possible aspect of phenomena that come through the sense doors. But sometimes people feel like, well, where is this taking me? You know, because this is, the Buddha taught all this to take us to awakening. And with the beauty of these 16 steps, which you can pull in and overlay and interweave with the four foundations, because they are, is as you'll see, it moves into subtler and subtler areas of states of mind and gladdening the mind and then seeing impermanence and falling away. So it's really moving toward awakening. So it's like a ladder of moving in that direction, and it helps to, I find it just helps to kind of keep it in mind or have that as a reference point I can slide into sometimes. And different people's temperaments may, you know, I know one friend of mine who's he's been a coder at Microsoft for years. He has an incredibly logical mind, and he can go click, 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 click through the 60 steps. It works for him in a way that for some of us, others, it might not so much. So it's just this beautiful kind of offering of possibilities, but they're all the same thing. They're not different. They're just all expressions of the same thing.
Yeah.
Anastasia, did I say that right?
Yes. Hello.
All right.
I have another question. So this practice kind of reminded me of how I used to meditate. And the reason I changed a little bit is I noticed that for me, that kind of concentration tends to build up tension that can wind up over time. So I guess I'm just wondering about the relationship of concentration and tension, because obviously some of it is required to concentrate, but I guess I've just never found, and this practice is I've sort of moved to avoiding that question, but I feel like this practice is forcing me to think about that again.
Do you think the tension was coming out of efforting to be concentrated or out of concentration itself?
I don't know, but I feel like the concentration causes the tension rather than tensing to concentrate.
Interesting. Yeah.
But it makes concentrating very easy, but not in a way that necessarily feels skillful. That makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of. I mean, because I know for me, what I would feel would be tension coming from efforting, efforting to be concentrated and efforting to stay with the breath instead of just letting the mind settle down naturally by itself. Do you feel that tension even when we start moving out into noticing the body and being sensitive to the body? Or does it kind of...
I guess I just kind of, I followed the instructions to follow the breath in and out.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm just more wondering if that's just part of it. Because I guess the reason I'm asking is, at some point I moved into territory where I was this is just not helpful. I'm traveling in the wrong direction. And so I'm wondering, am I sitting on that path again where I already know I'm traveling in the wrong direction? Or this is just normal part of this practice where you're cultivating concentration. And so there will be some amount of tension as you're practicing that muscle almost.
I mean, seems to me in my understanding is in this practice, we're having continuous mindfulness of breathing. That's the name of it, mindfulness of breathing. We have steady mindfulness of breathing all the way through. So we're not really consciously cultivating concentration per se, but from that continuity, a you know, even the word concentration is pretty loaded in English. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could say just like continuity of awareness or steadiness of attention. See if that's helpful, because people can get, I mean, I don't think in this Sangha, but I know there are sort of subworlds of Dharma practice where people can get very focused on the jhanas, and it gets to be a thing almost. It feels tense. Is my gut just learning, feeling how people get with it? You know, this want to accomplish a certain first jhana, second jhana, and then it seems pretty tight. And yeah, so you might just keep tasting and feeling where that is, because part of the beauty of this series is literally every single of the four tetrads ends with relaxation.
Mm-hmm. You might even when you are doing this, you might even use like a really light mental note of calming, mm-hmm. relaxing, just sort of get that kind of mood of not tensing up to be focused, but just relaxing and letting the mind be with the breath and the body. That might help.
Thank you.
Because one way, yeah, no, I think that's really good, Linda. And one way that really helps for me in the journey is that there's no I who is awakened. There's no self that is awakened. It's not a thing we accomplish. It is revealed. It unpacks. So we relax into it and see clearly how things are, rather than accomplishing something, which in our culture, you know, everything from speed skaters to football players to, it's all about accomplishment. So we're like really running against the grain to not almost subtly take that in as what we think we're doing. So just to think of it as awakening as being revealed, something that's already underneath, just covered over with layers. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's along the lines of what Lendl was saying. It's not necessary that I'm like concentrated on striving towards awakening. That's kind of like, I don't know, at my level, kind of an absurdist goal. I think it's maybe there's like some unconscious efforting to concentrate that I need to like be more deeply aware of and like relax that tension or something.
Right.
So I can try to do that.
But maybe you could open toward awakening.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, think of it that way. Relax toward awakening. Sherry, what do you think?
I had a very flowing experience with this, even while you were just describing the steps before we had an official sit time. It felt very organic for me. And I felt that the attention to the duration of the breathing was like beginning with this sort of more narrow focus, and then the everything just kind of widened, mm. widened and settled. Mm-hmm. Over time. Mm. And I really wonder about, you know, there's a strategy in the work that I teach where you invite somebody to exaggerate a habit so that they can see it, so that they can know when they've stopped doing that. And I wonder if the Buddha was pointing to something like that with this, you know, make the breath long, make the breath short. Okay, now just watch the breath.
Possibly. That's an interesting thought. Yeah.
The steps, like this shape really kind of came to me. This, you said mountain earlier. that really felt like... Mm. This shape of I'm wider and I'm more settled here, and so thank you.
And this is really beautiful because, you know, even if, say, for instance, you're primary practice is Satipatthana, maybe, you know, if we think of it that way. But there's a way in which this first tetrad informs the Satipatthana. It kind of broadens out the sense of resting in the breath and how it can take us into a depth and relaxation that might not be so obvious just looking at the Satipatthana. So they're completely interwoven and complementary, kind of like a tapestry or a quilt or something. It's all sort of mutually illuminating. Look at that, 8:27. Do we have any
already
announcements? Or, yeah.
Well, I not exactly announcements, but I did want to say, you know, we'll have our next class next week, and what I would recommend that everybody does during the coming week is during your daily sit or whatever is a good time for you to take that time to practice with these instructions, you know, and really practice with this mindfulness of the breath. I sent two different versions of the 16 steps. The wording is a little bit different in the two, so you can, you know, use the wording that feels right for you. But I would just encourage you to work with them and just see how it goes this week. See how it is, and we'll have some time at the beginning of our next session to review a bit and then let people check in about how their practice went for the week.
Shall we say who the next colleagues are leading the second one?
Sure, I believe
it's Lauren and me, and that's exactly what we're going to do at the beginning, just what you said.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lauren, did I say that right? Is that what you would have said too?
Yeah, we'll go through these four in the meditation. We'll do these more quickly and then go on to the next four. But before we actually do the meditation, we'll have time to just check in and ask questions and connect with this week and what you've done this week. Yeah. And then we'll have time after the meditation to discuss the second group of tetrads.
Sounds great. So before we close, maybe we can just take a couple of moments to sit together and share the merit of our practice. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that when we come together this way, practice together this way, it creates a force for good that can go out and affect others in the world. So maybe there's a special person you would like to share this force for goodness with. So you can bring them to mind. And then expand to all beings everywhere. May all beings find a sense of calm within. Thank you, everybody, for being here. This is just great to see you all, and hoping it'll be a really interesting and fun class for us.